Welcome to Divorce Talk, a podcast for people who are contemplating divorce, going through one, or would like to know everything about the divorce process. Each episode, you'll hear from Chicago divorce lawyers from Bierman LLP, one of the largest divorce and family law firms in the state of Illinois, speak on all things divorce, from child custody, divorce litigation, mediation, the collaborative process, and everything in between. Now, here are your hosts, the Bierman Divorce Lawyers.
Hi, I'm Sandra Napoli-Diargo. Today, we're speaking about financial affidavits with Alexandra Holland and Michael Seven. So without further ado, we'll get into our subject matter. But before we do so, Alexandra and Michael will share a little bit about themselves. Alexandra?
I'm Alexandra Holland. I'm from South Bend, Indiana. Originally, I graduated from Indiana University and then went on to John Marshall Law School. And I'm one of the associate attorneys here at Bierman.
Michael Seven. I grew up in Northbrook, Illinois. I went to Indiana University as well for undergrad and DePaul for law school. I've been practicing law for 11 years now, exclusively in the field of family law as well.
All right. So let's jump right into the topic. Financial affidavits. For a lot of people that don't know about the divorce process or what's involved, let's just start from the very beginning. What are financial affidavits and what are they used for?
Well, financial affidavits act as almost a roadmap for both the attorneys and the court and the other side in any case to break down what the assets are, what parties' liabilities are, and what their expenses are. So it's kind of gearing up what's going to be involved in a case and what we really need to determine the value of. It kind of gives us a roadmap of what the estate is and what the case will entail. So it's the first thing that's required to be done in any case, because otherwise we don't know what we're dealing with in a case until we have a document that really sets forth what the issues are. It is something that's signed under oath, so a good deal of care needs to be put into it. I mean, it is an affidavit, so it's something that has to be reliable and it has to be based upon documents themselves that show us the information that goes into it.
And kind of going off of what Michael said, it also gives us income information related to the parties and the tax liabilities associated with that, so we can come to terms with what their net income is and provide that information to the court as well. The court will usually, under the new statute, rely on the financial affidavit in order to set some sort of temporary support. Unless there's good cause for an evidentiary hearing, they'll just do it on a summary basis and rely on that information. So we want to make sure that the income and all the assets are very clearly set forth in the affidavit so the court can rely on it with some degree of certainty.
So every case requires a financial affidavit?
Yes, I generally make every client of mine do one, and I want one from the other side so that we have some element of reliability on what we're dealing with. Parties can waive off on it. It's something I would never recommend doing because it's the way to certify that you're getting correct information from the other side as well. But we practice predominantly in Cook County. I know for a fact Cook County rules require that they be completed in pre-decree cases, post-decree cases, even issues involving parental allocation issues actually say you need to fill out a financial affidavit as well. So they should be filled out in every case. And they're important documents that are the starting point of what's done in the courtroom, 9 times out of 10 for any issues.
And the starting point also for any sort of discovery issues to be set forth in the case as well. You have to complete the financial affidavit a lot of times before you can then initiate discovery as far as notices to produce, requesting certain documents, and things like that, interrogatories.
And are they made as an official, or are they part of the official court documents?
So in that respect, the financial affidavit doesn't actually get filed into the public record. And there's court rules that explicitly state that you're not supposed to do that because sometimes they contain account numbers. They shouldn't have social security numbers, but sometimes people put documents that are on them or physically attach documents with private information to them. So they're prohibited from being filed in the court record, but there's something that are, they're documents that are handed to the judge with respect to any hearing on financial issues, and they're incorporated by reference. And that's a phrase that lawyers use, incorporated by reference only, to mean it's physically not being put into the public record or court file, but it's as if it's attached to the document themselves. So that's something that even survives the trial court case. If a case goes up on appeal, for example, it's still considered part of the record, even though it's physically not in there for any member of the public to look up your financial information on.
So the public does not have to know how much their neighbor is making if they're going through a divorce.
Right. And that's something we're always mindful of, is that while a case itself is a case that's in public and open for the public actually to come and view, we try to maintain as much privacy and confidentiality of clients' information that we can.
So can you walk me through the process of completing the financial affidavit? I'm sure when people come to see you and you ask them for financial affidavits, they're overwhelmed and don't know what type of documents to collect or even how to gather the information. So do you help them gather the information that's needed, or are there supporting documents out there that tell people how to fill out a financial affidavit?
Yes, there are supporting documents that are already within the client's control. Bank statements, credit card statements, tax returns, pay stubs. Those are all documents we'll steer the client to look at. And as well, we also review the documents as well. And if anything looks off, we will flag the client or review the documents ourselves to determine how accurate they are. But yeah, they have the resources already in their control.
We also assign each client to work with a paralegal of ours too, who kind of gets all the documents together to really help them for put it together. We also use what we call family law software, and kind of, you know, while the document itself is a roadmap, the software acts as a roadmap for the clients if they want to take a stab at filling it out themselves, for the data entry to go piece by piece. And we're there every step of the way to help them out in doing that. And situations arise where, you know, maybe one of the parties isn't the party who was in control of that information throughout the marriage. So we have the ability to put footnotes in there and say, this is an estimation, or the information is not in my control. It's under the control of my spouse. So at the onset, when there's emergency issues and things like that, that require you to complete the financial affidavit, we do the best we can, but make notations in there saying this is subject to revision. We might not have all the information under our control, but this was done to the best of our ability.
And that dovetails into financial affidavits can be amended. So we don't always just complete it once and then finish it. There's often a lot of times where we complete it more than once throughout a case, or we amend it to reflect more accurate information as it becomes available.
I was just going to ask that, how accurate should one be in completing the affidavit? I'd be afraid that if I was off a penny, someone would be coming after me. How does that work?
Well, you should always try to do the affidavits to the best of your ability and make them as accurate as possible. While there's penalties for blatant misrepresentations in there, I've never seen a case where somebody has an honest mistake or something is slightly off. As long as you're making the good faith effort to do it without any misrepresentations, it is a document that is amended. It's updated from time to time because, unfortunately, some cases go on a little longer than parties or the attorneys or the court would like them to. So the, you know, income changes over time. The value of assets change over time. So as long as you're taking steps to update your financial affidavit with the information that you gather, or if you realize you were mistaken about something, as long as you're making a good faith effort to do that, it's okay. It's intended to be a working document, but something that you sign under oath because you're doing your best ability to disclose what you have and what your expenses are too.
Are there some common mistakes that you see over and over again?
Yes. I mean, oftentimes people will forget to list certain assets. There are kind of indicators for us as practitioners where if we notice there's a mortgage listed, but no real estate asset listed, we can sort of cross-check and make sure that we're kind of crossing all of our T's. You know, a lot of times clients will kind of guess. They'll say, oh, well, I didn't, you know, I just guess. And you can notice that with a really round number. And oftentimes we'll say, well, look through your bank statements, look through the resources that you do have to determine a more accurate figure so we can really try to be as accurate as possible.
As practitioners, when you're reviewing the financial affidavits, are there any red flags that you typically look for something being not 100% truthful?
So when I look at the other side's financial affidavit, and we kind of, you know, I've been doing this long enough where I've seen a lot of them. One thing I look for is expenses that are missing or something where it's clear someone else might be paying for their expenses because the numbers simply don't add up in terms of, you know, these are what my expenses are, this is what my income is, and it's clear that it's substantially different. And the question begs the question, how are you paying for all these things? Well, a lot of people in the United States live off of debt and credit card debts and things like that. But if there's no mortgage expense or rent, well, are you living with a family member? Or do you have a new significant other? Things like that really pop out at you, which, you know, as Ali mentioned earlier, is really forms the basis for what discovery we conduct. Is it gives us the list of questions we ask once we see the other side's financial affidavit. Because, I mean, at some point it is a matter of math, and not to say it doesn't add up because it doesn't make sense, but sometimes the numbers simply don't add up.
Makes sense. Okay. Well, is there anything else that would be important for someone completing a financial affidavit to know prior to either making an appointment with you or coming to see you for the first time?
Well, if someone's going to come in and see us for the first time, one of the things that we like to ask them to bring in is their most recent tax return, if they have it. And it kind of gives us a picture of what the combined income is, where they're drawing interest from, whether there's a business involved, things like that. So when you're preparing a financial affidavit, go to the main documents that would give you the information you need, like W-2s, tax returns. Tax documents are generally the most reliable because it's another example of something that you're putting a lot of care into that's also founded upon other documents too. So it's all relating to other documents too. So it generally helps the reliability of it if you have the tax documents available.
For the spouse who has not been involved in the financials, how do you advise those people as to how to get the information? Because there are plenty of people out there that may not even know where their tax documents are filed. They've never been involved and they're now ending maybe a 25-year marriage. Do you help them gather the information?
Yeah, and that's okay to not always know at the onset of the case. A lot of times, you know, as Michael mentioned before, we can make footnotes and we can, as long as the court's aware that we're not misrepresenting the information and that we're trying to be forthcoming, but we don't necessarily have access to everything, there will be other remedies down the road that will allow us to gain access to those documents through the spouse and provide a more financial or more accurate financial affidavit.
And another place to ask too is, even if the parties were filing joint tax returns year to year and one party wasn't as involved as the other, they can call their accountant. And generally, I find accountants are perfectly happy to help both spouses, as long as there's no loyalty issues or when there's a family business involved, things get a little more hairy. But generally, if you're a joint tax return filer, the accountant would be happy to give you the tax return and get you some of the information that you're looking for.
Good advice. I like that. All right. Well, thanks, Michael. Thanks, Alexandra. If you'd like to learn more about Alexandra or Michael, please go to the website. Please subscribe to this podcast, and we'll see you next time. I'm Sandra Napoli-D'Arco, and this is Divorce Matters.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Divorce Talk. Visit our website at www.biermanlaw.com, where you can subscribe to the show so you'll never have to miss a single one. Please also follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn and subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating. Be sure to tune in next time for another enlightening episode.